Just as early voting gets underway, new numbers are out this morning, letting contenders know their prospects in a slew of local races. Plus, new information on where voters stand on a number of local issues. We'll take your calls just ahead. And good Monday morning. Hope daylight savings time wasn't too tough for you to get up today. Thanks for tuning in live from Studio 5 to First Coast Connect on 89.9. I'm Melissa Ross. First Coast Connect, always live on the radio, and now catch our daily podcast on iTunes. Just ahead, we'll take your calls on the new UNF poll just as early voting gets underway. 549-2937 to join the show. Then later, we'll profile CNN's Kelly Wallace, a featured speaker at Generation W this month. Plus, huge news for the Ospreys as UNF is heading to the big dance. Culpepper later on with a look at the team's prospects. March Madness is in town. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first, today, early voting is just now getting started in Jacksonville at this hour. Voters will pick a mayor, a sheriff, and a slew of new city council representatives. And there are other big races on the horizon, notably for the region's state attorney office and public defender. This morning, UNF is out with new poll results on all those races and a couple of major issues voters are following. Professors Mike Binder and Matt Childers, both of UNF's Political Science Department and the school's Public Opinion Research Lab, are here now in studio to tell us all about it. Guys, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And here's our question to callers. We want to know who you're going to vote for, mayor, sheriff, and where are you on a couple of other issues? The human rights ordinance, what to do about pollution in the St. Johns River. UNF's going to share their poll numbers on all of this right now. We want your calls, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show. We also look forward to your comments on Facebook. Mike Binder, let's begin with you. In a moment, we'll talk about the polling in the mayor and sheriff's races. You came out with that the other day. But first, right now, you've got new numbers on some other important matters.
Yeah, we asked voters not only about vote choice, which is obviously important with an election coming up, but once these folks get elected, they have to govern. And there's some real big issues in front of council and potentially in front of council coming up. First up, you alluded to it, the human rights ordinance that came up a couple of years ago. 62% of likely voters in Jacksonville are supportive, 27% are opposed, and 11% don't know, which is ticking upward over the last couple of years.
62% in favor of updating the human rights ordinance. Matt, that's a pretty solid number for whoever gets elected mayor if pressure increases on the next administration to make that change.
Absolutely. And you have majority support for that across the board. You know, each party supports it. And if you break it down by race, everybody supports it.
Bipartisan appeal. How do you see this number affecting this issue in the coming years as activists keep pushing for that ordinance to include the LGBT community, Mike?
I think it's just a matter of time. We're seeing this across the country on a host of issues, from same-sex marriage on down. Most of the surrounding communities, even Atlantic Beach recently just passed a human rights ordinance. The clock is ticking, and it's an eventuality.
And if you're just joining us, UNF's pollsters are in studio today with new numbers on a slew of local political issues just as voters head to the polls this morning. Yes, early voting underway today. We'll go to your calls in just a moment at 549-2937. Okay, so broad support for the HRO, but what else did you find out?
Well, the other big issue that's been circling around City Hall the last several months, or even several years for that matter, is the pension and what to do about the pension. Currently, there's a proposal being discussed having JEA kick in some money up front in order for reduced payments down the road. The other idea that had been floated is a small sales tax increase. The JEA proposal has 45% support and 46% opposition. 36% opposition with 18% unknown. And then for the other option, for the sales tax increase, that is 48% opposed and 48% support and 45% opposed. So again, there is some tacit support, but it's not over that 50% barrier, and then there is some deep divisions on this issue.
Yeah, that's a tough one. That one's full of minefields, Matt.
Yeah, so we're talking about raising taxes, which a lot of people don't like, and then possibly cutting benefits in the future, which nobody wants to do, especially when it's police and firefighters. So it's a tough position, and you could understand why two of the three candidates, the major candidates in the race, are not willing to talk about it very much.
Except Bill Bishop, he came in at 11% in your mayoral poll. So he's appealing at least to a small slice of voters with his frankness. On the other hand, the other two candidates are playing it safe. They are doing better in the polls.
Sure. And there's a lot going on with the mayor's race and who's talking about what and who's actually hearing what these candidates are saying or not, which is a separate issue entirely.
Right. And you found both of that, guys, didn't you, that many voters really just don't have a lot of information about the candidates and the issues.
No, we asked people if they thought Alvin Brown and Lenny Curry were, you know, strong leaders and whether they shared, you know, people's values, whether they cared about people like them. More people, you know, since Alvin Brown's the incumbent, had an idea. But when it came to Lenny Curry, a majority of voters didn't know and couldn't answer the question.
So the big challenge for Lenny Curry is to define himself.
Define himself, get name recognition, get voters to know who he is. I think the campaign's done a fine job as far as giving voters a reason to vote against an incumbent, which is always tricky for challengers. Their shortcoming is who that alternative is, and Curry has not been able to define himself cleanly or clearly in front of the Jacksonville electorate.
On the other hand, if there is a runoff after the March 24th unitary election, almost two more months until the May final decision for the two top vote-getters to make their case.
Yes, and we saw that when we asked people who initially supported Bishop or Omega Allen, you know, 48% of those people, their second choice was Curry, and only about 30% were Brown. So that's looking a little better for Curry going into May.
And we'll go to your calls in just a moment on the new UNF poll at 549-2937. Now, you also did some interesting polling on some other public figures. State Attorney Angela Corey, Public Defender Matt Shirk, Superintendent Nikolai Vitti, even the JSO. Can you share with us those numbers?
Sure. So Matt Shirk and Angela Corey on the legal side of issues. Matt Shirk, unsurprisingly, his approval ratings were fairly low at 24%, which is quite poor for an elected official. But his disapproval was only at 37%. And coming off the year or two that he's had, almost Nixonian toward the end of his presidency in a lot of ways, to have 38% of people not know, have an opinion, it looks like the door might be ajar for him to get reelected.
Matt Shirk has a challenger, Mike Weinstein, a well-known name. But on the other hand, Matt, that election concurs with the presidential. He's got a year and a half to shore himself up.
Yeah, I mean, Shirk's got some time. So in the fact that so many people don't know, he can probably, there's a good chance he can skate by. But it's also incumbent about his challenger to get out there and really define himself and show that he's a clear alternative.
Let's talk about the state attorney's race. Wes White has filed to challenge sitting state attorney Angela Corey. How are the numbers for state attorney Corey?
Angela Corey's numbers are a little bit different. Her approval is at 35%, but her disapproval is at 51%, which is much higher. And her unknowns are much lower, down at 13%. And that makes a lot of sense. She's had a lot of face time in the last couple of years, some very high profile cases. And her reputation around the city has really taken a hit.
So that race looks to be, in your estimation, then more competitive?
It certainly appears to be, but you know, it really depends on how much people are paying attention to and who comes out.
And you're finding that across the board, people, the majority of people out there in Duval County aren't paying super close attention.
And I think there's a lot of reasons for this. One, as the economy improves, people are less concerned. They look at their day-to-day lives and say everything's fine. The other thing to this, I think there's some institutional impacts going on. We've just come off a multi-million-dollar, hundreds of millions of dollars governor's race. There's a rhythm to elections. There's a rhythm to politics. People say, okay, they exhale. But we look up right here a couple months later, and we have to pay attention again. And that's not something folks are used to doing.
And before we go to the phones at 549-2937, a few more interesting data points you guys have to share. Superintendent Vitti, JSO, and the St. John's River.
Yeah, St. John's River is an interesting one. People are not particularly optimistic about the health of it when a majority of folks think that the river is polluted. However, when you ask people, are you willing to pay a 1 cent sales tax increase to help if those funds are directed straight to the river for cleanup, 58% of the people say yes. And you find this with a lot of government programs. They're not, people aren't fans of taxes in general, but if you can tag a tax directly to a program, directly to a benefit, they're much more supportive of
it. So it's how it's messaged, how it's sold to the voters.
How it's messaged, how it's sold, and ultimately how it's actually used.
And Nicolae Vidi.
Let's see. Most people, about 50% approve of Vidi's job, 21% don't.
He's above 50%.
Yes.
Yeah. That's always important for any politician or office holder.
And he's not exactly a politician. Yeah. We don't vote for him. And we're about a week and a half late. You know, he just got appointed for another 3 years.
He just got re-signed to a new contract, right?
So he's going to be around a little while. And what's interesting in Jacksonville is the fact that we're even talking about this. The fact that the superintendent is such a public figure, takes such a important role, is unique in a lot of ways to this city.
But that number gives him, you know, political capital, I would guess, to continue with his agenda.
Absolutely. And I think we'll see that and what's going on downtown.
And then last but not least, you polled people on their approval of our police, the JSO, correct?
Yeah, and fairly strong support. That looks pretty good for the sheriff's office.
What are they at?
They're at 62%, which
highest in the survey.
Yeah, which is ironic in a lot of ways because crime is people's number one concern.
Yeah.
33% of the electorate thinks that crime is the number one issue facing Jacksonville, yet people are supportive of JSO.
And if you're just tuning in, early voting gets underway today in Duval County for a slew of races, from the mayor to a new sheriff to city council representatives, some referendums on the ballot too. What are your thoughts? Who will get your vote? Give us a call, 549-2937. Let's go to Bob in Riverside. Hey, Bob, good morning.
Morning. So I'm calling because, you know, I'm kind of a little frustrated with the way politics have worked out, particularly in my community here in Riverside. What I find is a lot of people are, you know, they're getting behind Bill Bishop because he said that he's going to support, he has supported an HRO. But I fail to see this as anything but really just being a political opportunist. People seem to forget that this guy is the same one who helped Herman Cain out not too many years ago. He could have picked any Republican to help out, but he picked out Herman Cain. And, you know, he's also publicly opposed to gay marriage. And I just don't see how he's really anything other than a political opportunist, just trying to slice off some of those votes from the LGBTQ community, from folks who might have otherwise voted for Alvin Brown. And that's what I'm voting for. And, I'm just interested in seeing how people see that as a move for gaining votes. Rather, I just don't see it as an honest move. I see it as something that's he's doing just to get a couple extra votes in there.
That's Bob in Riverside. Thanks, Bob. Matt Childers.
That's a fair point, but it's a question of how many people actually know that. And so he's framed himself as the pragmatic alternative to the other two. And that could sell in an election like this, but most people don't even know some of the basics we're finding. So Knowing something a little specific like that is a stretch.
It's a stretch. But of course, Bill Bishop's strategy, however you want to analyze it, is to make the runoff.
Sure. And to be fair, he actually did vote in favor of the HRO. And it has been widely discussed that Alvin Brown was not supportive and in fact made efforts to make it not reach his desk. So to be fair, he is positioning himself at least correctly on the issues as they're put in front of him.
Right. To be clear, both the incumbent and challenger Lenny Curry have taken non-committal stances on that issue.
Neither of them had an opportunity to vote on it.
That's true. That is true. Only one person in this race did. 549-2937. Vicky on the south side. Good morning, Vicky.
Good morning. I'm sorry I'm calling from my cell phone. I hope the reception is okay. I was just wondering, why isn't Ms. Allen participating in the upcoming debate?
A committee decision was made, Vicky, that all the candidates to have participation in the televised debate, which is in partnership with WJCT, the Times Union, and First Coast News, had to poll at least 5% to be included. So I appreciate the call on that. And by the way, it's 549-2937 to join the show. Let's go to a comment on Facebook. It's from Harriet Pruitt, the mayor of Neptune Beach. She recently endorsed Bishop in the race. She writes, "It's too often the money moguls determine who is elected versus the best candidate. People need to want to better educate themselves and stop letting the rep and dem machinery drive them. Get informed about the candidates, vote who you think would really serve the communities. It only takes one vote to make a difference. Well, that was certainly true in a recent race. I'm thinking of Jay Fant and Paul Renner. That came down to a two-vote difference.
And even in Neptune Beach, they had Jerry Holland and his supervisors had to go to a game of chance to solve that election.
It was a tie.
Yeah, they landed in a tie, and they had to go to flipping coins and pulling numbers.
So that it really is true, Matt. People need to realize their vote really, in some of these close contests, it does count locally.
Oh, absolutely. And turnout's going to be really low, so every vote certainly counts. It probably, per voter, matters a lot more this election than even last November or in a presidential election. And to get to the caller's point about money, I appreciate the point, but money matters in terms of being able to campaign. And Mr. Bishop has raised, unfortunately, a lot less than his two opponents, and it's harder for him to get his message out. So if you want Bishop to get out there, some people should donate.
And we'll go to your calls on this. On all of the poll numbers out from UNF's polling lab at 549-2937. Meantime, Supervisor of Elections Jerry Holland emailing the show. He's the outgoing supervisor. He writes, he wants to remind everyone that early voting starts today. Holland saying, having been a leader in most early voting sites in large counties in the 2012 and 2014 election cycles, our office will have 18 early voting sites for the spring election cycle, 8 more than used in 2011. It starts today, early voting, and goes through March 22nd, the Sunday before the election. So they're having it on Sunday, Mike. That means there will be an aggressive, I'm guessing, souls to the polls effort, particularly for Democratic voters on the north and west sides, who can be expected to have the opportunity to get bused from church to the polls.
Yes, all true. Most of the polls open at 10 a.m. today, the early voting sites. However, if you're downtown at the election supervisor of elections office, they're open already. They started at 8:30 today. So the election's current. It's now. It's happening. And that last Sunday before the election is typically souls to the polls. They were out in force in November. For that election, it wasn't enough in Duval County for the Democrats. But nonetheless, that is something that will be key to Alvin Brown's reelection efforts.
Turnout is key, Matt, for whoever makes the runoff in May, if we do go to a runoff. The turnout game is everything, isn't it?
Absolutely. Right now, you've got each party has at least 20% of their members not committed yet to a candidate. So in the next couple of weeks, this election is still a lot about persuasion, but in a low turnout election, it's really about mobilization. So this campaign in the next 2 weeks is as much about getting your people out as it is about trying to pick off those people who are yet to be committed.
And it's tough in an off-election year, as you said, Mike. I mean, here we have the polls open today, and the majority of people out there aren't going to vote and don't even know who the candidates are.
Yeah, I was out at Art Walk last week and with somebody from one of the campaigns, and they were talking to voters, trying to convince them, and voters, A, didn't know that there was an election, B, thought it was actually a partisan primary and Brown was running unopposed, and these are folks that actually worked for the city. So the idea that everybody is as plugged in as maybe your listeners are or as kind of the political elite are isn't quite the case.
Yeah, the numbers sure show that. 549-2937. Sandy on the north side. Hello, Sandy.
Hello. How you doing?
Great, thanks. Go ahead.
I just want to give a big shout out to Alvin Brown. I think he's been doing a great job for our city. He's a real guy. He seems to be somebody that is getting things done for downtown Jacksonville as well as all of Jacksonville. And the last thing I wanted to know is on the early voting poll stations, where on the north side, but by like River City shopping area, where is the station there to vote at?
You know, Sandy, you need to go to the website DuvalElections.com. And on that website will be a complete listing of all the early voting sites. That's what I would advise you to do.
Yeah, most of the all the public libraries have early voting. Gateway Center up there has early voting as well at the old tax collector's office.
Right, and we want to hear from whichever candidate you support, we want to hear from you this morning. Let's go now to Chuck at the Beaches. Go ahead, Chuck.
Hey, guys, good morning. I just wanted to make a comment. I've heard quite a few callers making references to the wealthy, et cetera, and I just wanted to mention the Davis family that helped with Mayo Clinic, Edwards Waters College, the Weavers to do so much for us, and Shad Khan. And I think there's a local attorney, and probably a lot of these people help with NPR. So I'd like your comments on from your guests on, you know, is a discrepancy. I think these people do a lot for us. Thank you.
Thank you, Chuck. Matt.
Yeah, that's certainly true. I mean, these folks do spend a lot of money on political campaigns and donate big money, but they also donate a lot of money to local causes, which is a great thing, and we should definitely acknowledge it. Caller has a point.
549-2937, Victor at the Beaches. Hello, Victor. Good morning.
Hey, Melissa. I'm just wondering if city council candidates were included in the poll, and if so, when those results will be released.
Sure. Let's talk about the city council. Mike Bender.
So because there are literally 19 different races. Well, not 19. There's a couple of people that are unopposed, but there's so many races, 50 separate candidates. It was just completely unwieldy to do in a survey like this. We did do a general survey. We asked a question about approval of the city council and the job that they're doing, and it was tacitly supportive. It was mostly in the middle, but it was 40% approve, 43% disapprove, with 17% not knowing, which is actually pretty good for a legislative body.
That's not bad. In the meantime, the local 9 in 15 movement is pushing hard. They have been the women behind this initiative to get more women on the city council. Since there will be 9 open seats this year, their goal was to get 9 women to fill those seats. They may or may not reach that, but they've got a number of strong candidates that they fielded.
Yeah, there's a lot of strong candidates, both women and men. A lot of folks with experience, some folks with private sector experience. There's a series of good candidates out there, and I urge you to look at those 5 district-wide races, and then also your key district. You're one of the 14. Take a look. Find out about these candidates.
That's right. And by the way, if you get the sample ballot at your house, I noticed, Matt, the supervisor's office printed out profiles on all of the candidates on that sample ballot so that you can familiarize yourself with them before you vote.
Absolutely. Take a look. If you haven't been able to take a chance yet, so certainly look, because there's a bunch of good information on there. It tells you everything you want to know about everybody running.
And if you're just tuning in right now here on First Coast Connect, we are discussing the election. Early voting starts today in Duval County. Election day is March 24th. A candidate just tweeted the show. It's Lisa King. She's running for City Council District 2. I guess she heard that caller, and she tweets, "Closest early voting site to River City Marketplace is Ocean Way Community Center off North Main Street in New Berlin." That must be in her district.
There you go.
549-2937, Deanna at the Beaches. Go ahead, Deanna.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to call in and inform that I'm a supporter of Alvin Brown, Mayor Brown, but I am disappointed in his, I guess, not taking a stance on the HRO issue or openly supporting LGBT rights here in the city. And I just wish that we'd have more candidates that would come forward on the issue. And I guess to speak to your comments there about there being openings on city council, I am hoping that those who, you know, look to join the council will hopefully work towards having equality for all members of this team.
Deanna, thanks. Well, in light of your new poll numbers, gentlemen, the people in support of making this change have some new ammunition, don't they?
They certainly do. And I think your caller makes an interesting point, and this is something that the Brown campaign has wrestled with. That wing of the party does feel alienated and does feel neglected during the first term. Making efforts to bridge that gap is important for the Democrats. You know, do those voters go to Bill Bishop? Do those voters stay home? It's unlikely that they would shift to Lenny Curry, but they might just not show up at all. And that's important.
But it's striking to note, though, Matt, that initiative in this county has bipartisan support.
Yeah, 51% of Republicans support it. You know, a stronger majority of Democrats support it. Non-affiliated voters more strongly support it as well. It's something that you might actually see the mayor I mean, he's socially conservative. He might be more willing to come out and support that in the future.
It doesn't seem to be a losing issue for anyone at this point, given your numbers.
It doesn't. There are some religious organizations that are more opposed to it than others, particularly some of the black churches and some of the pastors there. And it's thought that they were very much opposed to it last time around. And I'm not sure that that has changed.
Don on the South Side. Go ahead, Don.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you for the show. This is wonderful. I'm a Yellow Dog Democrat, and what I find a lot of times is the parties are obscured, and I'm not sure, who to vote for on city council or anything like that. I would much prefer to ideologically to vote Democrat. What does the panel have to say about that?
Thank you, Don.
Well, in Jacksonville, it's easy. There's a D and an R after all the candidates' names. So if you're looking for that shortcut, that's an option. However, like we've seen with the mayor's race, it's not always the case where Democrats and Republicans actually fit the broader national partisan image.
They don't. And Matt, this is a unitary election. You can vote for any candidate you like.
Absolutely. And at least when it comes to the mayor's race, Mayor Brown's been running a very centrist campaign, I think that's fair to say. So you might get your signals mixed a little bit. But, look at those voter pamphlets that, the county sent out. There's plenty of information that should help you if you don't know a lot about the candidates yet.
And they all have websites as well.
Look who got endorsed by whom. Look at their websites. A lot
Speaking
of that information
sends you
the right signals.
Sure. And if you go to WJCTnews.org, we actually have a story on that on our website letting you know who's endorsed who in all of these races. So great information as always from your polling operation, guys. Thanks so much for joining us today with all these results.
Thank you for having
us. Thank
you. And we were joined by UNF's Mike Bender and Matt Childers of the school's Public Opinion Research Lab. Much more still ahead later. UNF, speaking of UNF, is going to the big dance. Cole Pepper with a look at March Madness coming to town. But up next, Generation W profiles CNN's Kelly Wallace. That's in a moment.
Remember your first time?
My first time? First time of what?
My first time ever?
It's a little uncomfortable. Should I talk about it now?
Your first time listening to NPR's Morning Edition, that is.
People just talking like normal people, telling me about the world.
There's always one story that makes me wake up.
No matter how many times you've listened, listen again each weekday to Morning Edition from NPR News.
Weekday mornings starting at 5 on 89.9.
Join WJCT and the Jacksonville Public Education Fund on Tuesday, March 10th for a special evening to talk about teaching and student success. Refreshments and a panel discussion will be followed by a screening of the new documentary, 180 Days Hartsville. The event is Tuesday, March 10th at WJCT Studios from 5:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. RSVP at wjct.org/events/teaching-transformation.
The Florida legislature is in session, and Capitol Report is your nightly connection to what's happening in Tallahassee as lawmakers debate and decide issues that affect all Floridians, such as expanding health care and gambling, protecting the state's water resources, private versus public schools, and prison reform. Hear Capitol Report each weeknight during the legislative session on this Florida public radio station.
Weeknights at 6:30 on WJCT 89.9.
WJCT's Travel and Entertainment Auction is where you'll find over 300 items, most starting at 75% off at auction.wjct.org. Packages include lodging, attractions, dining, recreation, beauty, and more. The bidding begins March 10th and continues through March 16th. Log on to auction.wjct.org for more information.
Welcome back. Well, she's a digital correspondent and editor-at-large for CNN Digital, focusing on family, career, and work-life balance. Kelly Wallace, an award-winning television correspondent, writes in-depth articles and socially sourced stories and does a lot of original work for CNN.com's Living section and CNN Parents. Wallace will be a featured speaker at this month's Generation W Conference, the premier women's leadership event in our area. She's on the line now with a preview. Kelly Wallace, a pleasure. Thanks for being with us.
Melissa, great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Sure, and I'm so excited to see you speak on the 27th. Work-life balance, that's something we all struggle with. Can you give us a preview into your talk?
Yeah, work-life, you know, a friend of mine, it's so funny, and I always tell this story, but it's my friend's example, but instead of balance, you know, the balance beam, because you're always falling off, right? She often talks about it thinking that we're all on a sailboat, and I'm not a sailor, but I like the thought that sometimes in life you're going to tack more toward work, right? But you're still on the sailboat. You're still going forward.
Right.
And sometimes you have to tack more toward family, but again, you are still moving forward. And I think that is, you know, the experience of so many women and men. I mean, you are seeing more and more men talking about, you know, how difficult it is for them, too. They want to spend as much time with their kids, demands of work. So the conference will be bringing together women from around the country, from the Florida area, because it's the power of bringing women together, the connections we make, the inspiration we get from hearing other stories, and then we all walk away with, you know, kind of strategies and ways to both help our own lives, but also empower other women, especially younger women. I think that's going to be a big focus of the conference.
Sure. And what strategies do you find have worked for you in your own life?
Well, a couple of things. One, when I'm at work, I try to be at work, which means that instead of sitting here thinking, oh, I wonder what the kids are doing now. I mean, my girls are in school now, so,
right. But
they're 7 and a half and almost 9. But it's a little bit of that thinking that, okay, when I'm at work, I'm going to try and focus on what I have to do and be as focused and efficient as I can. And then when I'm at home, thankfully, for the most part, I have a job where I can be focused on the kids. And then when they're down and they go to sleep at night, then I can sort of log back in and get back into work. So I have found that has been a very healthy way for me to say, look, I have my work responsibilities, and I'm going to try to get them done and do them as well as I can. But when I have my family time, I'm going to be as selfish as I can be for that. And thankfully, I have kind of the work structure that allows me to do that.
Let's talk about that. You came to CNN from iVillage, and you've led in the digital sphere at CNN. You've landed interviews with a number of prominent women, First Lady Michelle Obama, Alicia Keys, Dr. Oz, a guy, but a lot of newsmakers. Tell us a little bit about your work at CNN.
Yeah, and, you know, many of those interviews, which have been amazing, I had a privilege of doing them when I was at iVillage, which is this women's website. And part of my journey, I was a longtime news correspondent, national news correspondent, and I was at CBS News and got very interested in the power of women. I became a mom, so, of course, I was very interested in issues affecting mothers, but more and more interested in issues affecting women. And that led me to wanting to kind of move in that direction full-time, focusing on issues affecting women, and particularly the power of women online. And so, yes, I had the absolute pleasure of interviewing people like First Lady Michelle Obama, who has so much to say about the work-life balance and the importance of, you know, raising our girls with confidence and with great body image and allowing them to be everything they want to be. And since I've been at CNN, I've also been, you know, focusing on those issues and trying to have as many interviews with newsmakers as possible. I interviewed Sarah McLachlan, the wonderful, amazing singer-songwriter. And when you sit down with people, and Randy Zuckerberg, you know, the digital entrepreneur and sister of Mark Zuckerberg, when you sit down with people like that, you know, a lot of the conversation comes down to how they do it too and what their work-life balance is. I mean, Sarah McLachlan's traveling around the country away from her children, and that's hard. And so everybody has sort of their own kind of experience of how they do it, how they try to make it work for them, how they don't always get it right. No one can be perfect. I remember Michelle Obama talking about, I said, just like cry and think, I'm not doing this mother thing right. And she said, oh, yeah. I mean, I have mom crises just like everybody else. And sometimes I think we put some of these newsmakers on pedestals and think that they're just, they have all the resources, they can't have, you know, the normal worries that we have, but many of them do, no question about it, and some of the same insecurities and hopes that they're doing the best for their families that, that most of us have as well.
Oh, absolutely. Well, it's so fascinating to speak with you, and it's sure to be a highlight at the event when you give your talk. We really look forward to it. Our program will be live that day from Generation W, so I hope to see you there, Kelly. Thanks for being with us.
I look forward to it. And any of your listeners who want to get more information, they can go to www.genwnow.com to really see such a range of speakers and conversations that will be taking place that day. It should be great.
Absolutely. She's Kelly Wallace of CNN. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Kelly will be a featured speaker at Generation W, as she said, genwnow.com for tickets. That's Friday, March 27th on the UNF campus. We'll be broadcasting live that day, too. And speaking of UNF, the men's basketball team there is headed to the show. How about that? We'll tell you all about it in just a moment.
WJCTnews.org is your source for the latest local, national, and international news 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Podcasts of your favorite local stories and shows, the WJCT First Read every weekday morning, and playlists from all of our after-hours music programming. From your computer or mobile device, see it all at WJCTnews.org.
Who will be Jacksonville's next mayor? Where do the candidates stand on the issues affecting the First Coast, such as pensions, taxes, public health and safety, downtown development, and the city's human rights ordinance? WJCT has teamed up with First Coast News and the Florida Times Union to present Jacksonville 2015. The first debate with mayoral candidates Alvin Brown, Bill Bishop, and Lenny Curry. Jacksonville 2015, Thursday night at 7 on WJCT Public Television.
Join us weeknights at 7 for music. From symphonies to the latest indie music, you'll hear it all weeknights at 7, only on 89.9 FM.
Deep below the sea, darling, on deep blue sea. Deep below
Welcome back. The UNF campus is joyful this morning. The school's basketball team is headed to the NCAA tournament. That audio from the UNF Spinnaker, the Ospreys are going to the big dance. Meanwhile, Dr. Jay Coleman, a UNF business professor and sports fanatic, is trying to take some of the madness out of this month with his dance card method for determining NCAA March Madness brackets. He calls it bracketology, and he's on the line now with more. Dr. Coleman, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So, lots of excitement with the Ospreys. Kudos on your team going to the tournament. Pretty exciting.
Thank you. Yes, it is. Was there yesterday, and it was fantastic to see.
Yeah. So let's talk then about the formula to predict which teams will get will advance. Your dance card. How did you put all this together?
We've been doing this for about 15 years, going back to about 2000 or so. We were looking at teams who had gotten bids into the tournament, teams that might have been in the running for getting a bid, and we were able to collect a variety of team performance statistics for both subsets, if you will, and we're able to apply some advanced analytics modeling to develop a predictive formula, and we've been using it ever since.
Now, I'm told that your method has a 98% accuracy rate. Is that right?
That is correct. Over the last 3 years, we're 108 out of 110 at predicting bids, and Don't know of anybody who's been better. Some have been as good. But yeah, the formula itself is quite good.
Pretty darn good. So what is the formula showing, both for the Ospreys and some of the other teams?
Well, for the Ospreys, we're in, so we don't have to sweat it. That's the great news. Everybody else is going to be sweating it come next Sunday night. But yeah, the question for us is going to be not necessarily whether we're getting in. Obviously, we are, but where we're going to be seated. And that's one of the things that the formula doesn't necessarily predict is what the seedings are going to be. So that's still up in the air.
All righty. But just based on your many years following this and your love of sports, who do you like in the tournament?
Well, you got to like Kentucky. I've been joking around, and I think others have too, that I think maybe you could take Kentucky's second team and perhaps even win the title. But that it, you know, in a single elimination tournament format where you got to win six games, it doesn't matter even if you're that good. It's certainly not a, pardon the pun, it's not a slam dunk that you're going to go all the way. But you got to like Kentucky. Certainly Virginia's been up there all year long. Villanova's up there, Duke. People like that, but you got to favor the Wildcats.
And where can people go to learn more about your method, your dance card for the NCAA tournament?
We have a website called dancecard.unf.edu. All the particulars are there. I'm updating it every morning through Sunday afternoon. Actually, my last update will be just before the 6 o'clock selection show. So feel free to come on by. I got a couple of Twitter accounts. You can follow me there, too.
He's UNF's Dr. Jay Coleman. Go to his website and his dance card method for determining those brackets. 98% accuracy. Dr. Coleman, fascinating to talk to you. Thanks for joining
us. My pleasure. My pleasure.
And finally, this hour, yes, March Madness will not only come to Jacksonville, it will involve a Jacksonville school for the first time in an age.
I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper. Wouldn't you like to be a pepper too?
Cole Pepper is here now to talk about the Ospreys and the rest of the week's sports. It's so exciting, Cole.
It is. It's been a long time, and as a guy who grew up in a big college basketball area and went to
the Midwest,
University of Kansas, which is when college basketball is big in Jacksonville, I love it. And we have a great confluence here of not only the NCAA basketball tournament coming here for the third time to play the second, third round games, but also now we know we'll have, as you mentioned, UNF into the NCAA basketball tournament after a 63-57 victory over USC Upstate in the Atlantic Sun Tournament yesterday in front of over 6,000 at the UNF Arena. First ever bid to the NCAAs for a UNF basketball team. There hasn't been a representative from Jacksonville in the NCAAs since JU's last visit, 1986.
Was that when Artis Gilmore was playing?
No, not quite. I think Dee Brown and Otis Smith, that group had a run there. But Matthew Driscoll's Ospreys will have to wait until Sunday to find out who and when they'll play. Certainly a chance they could end up in Dayton and play one of those opening round games a week from Tuesday. And then if they, depending on who you believe, you see some of these projections about where things would wind up. A couple of projections have them playing in the that opening round game. And then in the second round, should they win, being matched up with Duke. Or Kentucky.
Oh, my goodness.
So in either case, it's not going to be an easy road at all. I do not think that we're going to have a Florida Gulf Coast kind of run like we had a couple of years ago.
Uh-huh.
Now, the Atlantic Sun, the conference in which both JU and UNF play, have had good success in the postseason of late. Mercer won a game last year, although they're no longer in the conference. Florida Gulf Coast won a couple of games, got to the Sweet 16 2 years ago. I don't think that's going to continue, but it's certainly been a great run for the Ospreys so far in the regular season and the postseason.
And I got a little scoop this morning from one of our interns, UNF students. Mm-hmm. First time that stadium's ever sold out for a sporting event.
Yeah, it was packed yesterday, and it was and of course they stormed the court afterwards, and it's great to see when fans really embrace something like that. And you know, I've been involved at some level or another with JU basketball for quite a while, either as the radio announcer or as the public address announcer. And people always ask, "Well, what does JU have to do to get back to the old days?" Well, you're not going to get back probably to the Artis Gilmore days, going to the national championship game. But you know, listen, get to the tournament. And
yeah.
JU's not been able to do that. Now UNF has.
Now, I also heard Coach Driscoll is well known around campus for his ever-present mug of Dunkin' Donuts coffee.
Well,
he's going to be drinking more of that.
He is Captain Caffeine. I mean, his energy level is, you put he and Gus Bradley in a room together, and you might just you know, find the God particle with those guys bouncing off each other. It's really remarkable. He is a high energy guy, a high passion guy, and I think he runs about 5 miles every day just to try to burn off some excess energy.
Oh, well, good luck to him. It's great to see that. And people, as you said, people need to get their tickets. Now, let's talk about the Armada. You called that game. How's the Armada doing?
Generally impressive in the preseason. Over 6,000 at that game as well yesterday at Community First Park. A little bit of an overlap with the UNF contest as well. They may have found a bit of a rival, the Armada. The Charleston Battery of the USL, which is the league below the NASL, beat the Armada 2-0 yesterday at the Community First Park. Second time in as many preseason matches that Charleston has beaten the Armada. They're the only team ever in the history of anybody to have beaten the Armada.
So far.
And they've done it twice. Jacksonville's beaten teams from the NASL and the MLS, but just can't seem to get past the Battery. They're not likely to see the Battery again, playing in a different league this year. Jacksonville's next home match, March 28th, when they face the Tampa Bay Rowdies, a good in-state rivalry in the NASL. That's at Everbank Field, and then the regular season begins on April the 4th.
Oh, that'll be fun.
Yep.
Now, let's talk about Everbank Field. The Jaguars start signing free agents on Tuesday. Hard to believe that's coming around already.
Yeah, tomorrow, the end of the league year, allows for the free agents to sign. We're in the midst right now of a negotiation period, a three-day negotiation period where you can re-sign your own or start to try to have conversations with free agents. Already some of the targets that the Jaguars may have been interested in off the market. A wide receiver, Randall Cobb, is re-signed with Green Bay, and there are reports that Lions defensive tackle Ndamukong Suh is ready to sign with the Miami Dolphins on about a $114 million contract. Safety Devin McCourty also was a guy who a lot of folks thought the Jaguars would be targeting to help the defense. He's re-signing with the Patriots. It does appear, though, that the Jags are getting close to making a deal with Denver tight end Julius Thomas, who was one of Peyton Manning's favorite targets last year. The Denver Post, in fact, expects Thomas to sign with the Jaguars. Now, if they do that, they'll likely say goodbye to Mercedes Lewis. They did re-sign Tyson Alualu to a two-year contract over the weekend, and there are a few others that the Jaguars may be looking at as far as free agency. One of the interesting names that's popped up is a running back, DeMarco Murray, from the Cowboys. He was the leading rusher in the league last year. The Cowboys had to decide who they were going to put the franchise tag on to keep at a, you know, one-year deal, either Dez Bryant, the wide receiver, or Murray. They decided to go with Dez Bryant, the wide receiver. And when you think about what the Jaguars traditionally have had at running back, they've usually had a very good running back in their history. Fred Taylor, Maurice Jones-Drew, even James Stewart going back. Murray, it might be a guy who they would look to. Toby Gerhart did not perform up to the expectations last year as a free agent acquisition. And because they've missed out on Cobb and Sue and McCourty, this might be an area because they have a lot of salary cap room. Shad Khan and Dave Caldwell, the general manager, have talked about wanting to be ready to take a swing for the fences if the right pitch comes. So this might be that right pitch.
Let's talk about Shad Khan for a moment in the context of his ambitious plans for the shipyards. The Jaguars would have a presence there. What are your thoughts about that proposal?
Well, you know, certainly the first thing from a football standpoint that popped out to me was the practice
facility,
fields, and how that would work. It's an interesting thing. I think in the big picture, I think it's an ambitious, visionary kind of idea. I'm not sure how practical it is. People who know more, you know, the mechanical engineering and city planning would have to have a better idea about how whether it could be done and whether it could be done, reasonably in terms of cost. But from a football standpoint, the Jaguars have for a long time talked about, going back to when Wayne Weaver owned the team, wanting to have an indoor facility. Tom Coughlin just wanted, by the very soul of himself, wanted to have an indoor facility because, you know, in the warm weather months in the afternoon, what's it do here in Jacksonville?
Right.
Thunderstorms. So that would give the Jaguars an opportunity to do that. Now, I don't think that has impacted the Jaguars winning or losing too many games through the years. There have been some times where they've had to practice. I remember being at the Prime Osborne one year when the Jaguars had to practice a couple of times because of very heavy thunderstorms in the area. They've done it at the arena on the Sharks practice field before, or game field, in fact, before as well. But that would give them a chance to go, have a sheltered practice field, which certainly would be a positive. It would be interesting, though, if that became the Jaguars' practice fields. What happens to the existing practice fields area? What happens there?
What do they do with that?
Yeah, that's an interesting question.
We'll have to follow that. But in the meantime, always great to see you. Follow Cole on Twitter, at Cole Pepper. Thanks as always, Cole. Have a great week.
Thanks, Melissa.
And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Sean Birch. The show's theme composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Shevchik. If you've got feedback, we want to hear it. Send an email to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. And make sure to catch our daily podcast. It's now up on iTunes. Next on Diane Rehm, an oil train crashes in Illinois, the 11th accident in the U.S. and Canada this past year. What's behind the rise in these oil train derailments and calls for the federal government to respond? That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.